of lentil stew. What I want to see here is how to really understand a story that we learned as children, as well as a lesson for how to read Sefer Bereishis and Chumash in general. If you go to the end, you'll see the sources are there at the end of the sheet. Verses 12 to 15.
Oh, 12.
Yeah. Okay. So I gave you the story in number 12. I gave you the translation. I've stopped putting psukim in Hebrew on my sheets a while back because there was a debate about how is it likely that they would be called shemos and create problems. And even though there's a strong reason to say not, nonetheless, I figured, all right, so I'll put the English on. You can look at a chumash and you'll see the original. So here's our story. Yaakov cooked stew. Esav came from the field and he was tired. Esav says to Yaakov, pour down my throat now, or please, depending on how you translate the word
not.
Right. Haliteini is like to pour it down my throat. It's like, it's not a polite way to say this. This red stuff, right? Ha'adom, ha'adom hazeh. For I am tired. And therefore, he or it was called Edom. That's a problem when I start translating something, and especially a story like this. Alkein karashmo Edom. Most people read it as, that's why Esav is called Edom. The problem, as Abarbanel and others point out, is that no, he's called Edom because of the way he was born. Right? Vayitzerishon Admoni. So they say that the line here says, therefore it was called Edom. Therefore the soup is called Edom, because Esav called it Adom, Adom Hazeh. Okay. Minor point.
Why would the Torah tell us what the soup is called?
Right. So that's a good question.
Why don't you just call it lentil soup?
Well, that we're getting to. And Yaakov said, sell me today your birthright. And Esav said, behold, I'm going to die. What is a birthright to me? And Yaakov said, swear to me today. And he swore to him, and he sold his birthright to Yaakov. And Yaakov gave Esav bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank and rose and went. And Esav scorned the birthright. There you go. So, a couple of notes. First of all, do you notice the difference between what he asked to buy and what he actually got?
Yeah, birthright versus...
Oh, no, what Esav asked.
He got bread and...
Yeah, he gave him the bread.
He got bread, right? And he drank.
And he ate and drank.
So the Shach, who is better known for his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, but it's the same person, Rosh Avseh HaKohen, says that Yaakov, I think it's the same person, says that Yaakov was generous with his resources. Think like Avraham and Amor Ma'adva say harbe, right? Avraham says to the Malachim, we'll bring you out something, and then he brings out this massive meal. So Yaakov sold him the stew, and he also gave him bread. And then the wine, maybe, I think it's Radak's father who says, maybe the wine Esav brought on his own. Yaakov wasn't giving him wine. It's the Alshich. Sorry. The Alshich says that Yaakov is giving Esav Musar. Like, you're such a glutton. You just want to take this stew and pour it down your throat. Eat a proper meal. Mm-hmm. Have some bread. And then Esav brings his own wine to go with it to drink. The text doesn't say wine. It just says he drank, but we assume that's kind of what people would drink.
Maybe he wanted to make a formality out of it. Like, this is like sitting down, we're going to have an exchange.
Wash or something.
Like exactly. That. Like, this is not taking lightly. Like, we're not backtracking here. Like, this is going to happen, this transaction. So, kind of like signed with a dotted line.
Right. Maybe. I think. Maybe. I mean, we're going to see more about the nature of this transaction and what is actually being transacted that may affect the way you would look at it. The, Hadassah asked the question about the red stuff. So they make the point, the commentators pick up on that and say, this is the personality of Esav. Like, he's not even paying attention to what it is. Give me the red stuff. That's all he cares about. He doesn't know, for all he knows, it's shakshuka. Like, it's just something red. Well, that's what
that's
came to mind.
I mean,
there you go.
Red
good choice, shakshuka versus lentil stew. So that's another piece. I mean, there's a lot to say, obviously, on this story, but the question that I want to get to is, when we learn this story in school, right, they teach it to us as a barter, right? You want the stew, you have to give me your birthright. Yeah. Is that what the psukim say?
No. Yaakov just says, sell me your birthright, not for the stew.
Right.
Correct. Yeah. It's like a good time to bring this up.
Yeah.
Like,
you're vulnerable. You're hungry.
You're hungry. Can you sell me your birthright?
I mean, think about it, though. Would Esav really not demand more than a bowl of soup?
Well, that's why it says, but he does Esav as a
bechor. Yeah, but just as a businessman.
Yeah. right? Is it this?
I mean, this isn't he you know, the Gemara has a phrase that it uses.
His father was very poor because he was the one who provided for his father. So what is the Bechorah to give him?
What is the Bechorah to... But it's worth something to Yaakov. You're not going to say to Yaakov, you want the Bechorah, you better pay me? Ephraim knows to demand 400 shekel. Yeah. Esav doesn't?
But it's interesting, it says, and Esav scorned the birthright. So clearly, it was not valuable to him.
That's what I'm saying.
Right, but he knows it's valuable to Yaakov.
It's not valuable to Yaakov. Yeah, when you're selling something, you see somebody else wants it.
Someone says to you, I want to buy your fill in the blank. It doesn't matter. It could be your trash. You know?
Why do you want my trash?
Is there something about the moment in which he caught him? Because he's saying, like, he's desperate for this food, right?
Yeah.
Like, it makes a point. He was saying that he was tired, and he says, "Behold, I'm going to die." Like almost like Yaakov catches him in some sort of desperate moment where he's not going to.
And that's the way they read it in school. They read it as he's dying. But when you think about it, that also is very difficult to understand. The text says he's ayef, he's tired, which I understand.
Yeah.
He's dying. I mean, Esav, the mighty hunter. Right, it is like staggering back from whatever hunting he was doing.
I'm going to die one day. Who cares?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. But not the read that they give you in school, which is
not like I'm dying. Or whatever.
I mean, where is Yaakov sitting? Like he couldn't go five steps further inside the tent and get food before he dies.
So what's the question?
My question is this really a sale of the Bechorah for the meal, or is something else happening here? It's not about selling the Bechorah for the meal. It's not a barter at all. I'll give you three explanations for this that say what you're actually seeing here are two transactions being put side by side in the Torah and making it look like it's one transaction. It's really two different transactions. So Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch, as well as Rav Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg and Aksava Kabbalah, I don't know who said it first because they're both, I think, Germany of the same era, but they say... Look carefully at the last pasuk, and if I had brought the Hebrew, you'd really get it. V'Yaakov nasana le'esav. Normally, you would say, if Yaakov is now giving it to him, you would say, v'yitain, Yaakov le'esav. Yaakov nasana le'esav means Yaakov gave it before. In other words, what actually happened is, Yaakov cooks the stew, Esav comes in, he says, I'm tired, he says, I want your stew, pour it down my throat. Yaakov says, okay, I'll give you the stew, no problem, the stew is yours. Then Yaakov says to him, I would like your birthright. And they do this deal. And Yaakov buys it, cash. And then he has the meal. He then hands it to him. But he had already said to him, it's two different transactions.
Right.
That's one take. Second take is found in a Medrash. It's also brought by the father of the Radak. The Chizkuni says this. The Hadar Zakenim says this. He says, no. The meal was a way to mark the transaction. Which goes back towards, you know, what you were saying. The meal was just a way to mark the transaction. The transaction was with money. If you think of Avraham and Avimelech, right, where they sit down and they have a meal when they make a bris, it was Yitzchak with Avimelech, one of them, what they did with Avimelech, they actually sat down and they ate together. You have a meal to mark the transaction. But it wasn't, again, it wasn't trade me one for the other. It was Sami Yer Bechorah, and then they sit down and they have this lentil stew together. Abarbanel gives the most creative approach, because Abarbanel likes to give creative approaches. He says something that's wild, that I think contradicts a pasuk, but it's very interesting anyway. He says, not necessarily contradicts, it depends how you read the pasuk, but he says, look, Esav is the one who is out hunting. Yaakov is the one who is Yoshev Ohalim. He's the one who sits down, he's in the tent, he's at home. Yaakov is the one who's taking care of the family. Anything that Rivka needs, anything Yitzchak, who can't see, needs, assuming that he can't see already at this stage, which is a Barbadel's assumption, Yaakov is providing on behalf of Yitzchak and Rivka. What is the role of a Bechor in the family? To provide, to take care of everybody. The Bechor is supposed to be taking care of the parents. So Yaakov says to Esav, I'm already acting as Bechor. I'm the one who's taking care of mom and dad. You know, you should just make it official. Sell me the title of Bechor. I'm doing it anyway. That's what he says. Not because he wants that title. Yaakov wants it because of what the Bechor represents and so on. But that's what Yaakov says to Esav. And so he gives Esav the meal as a symbolic representation of taking responsibility for Esav. That's what Abarbanel says. Yaakov says, I am now taking responsibility for you. It's really cute, no?
Like that.
My problem with it in terms of the pasuk is that the pasuk says, Vayahav Yitzchak es Esav ki tzayid befiv. And the literal meaning of that pasuk is, because he fed him. He gave him tzayid.
So it was
exactly.
So that's
at home. Maybe he went to get mouthwash from toothpaste when they needed it. But Esav was the one bringing the food.
Maybe he cooked the tzayid. Maybe he cooked the tzayid. I don't know. I mean, you could argue.
Like barbecue. I mean,
the Medrash reading of tzayid befiv is that he ensnared. Yeah, he ensnared Yitzchak with his mouth. So maybe Abarbanel is going with that read of tzayid befiv. I don't know. But those are three approaches. All of them, what they have in common. And as I gave you in number 13, they're all listed there. But what the three approaches have in common is that these are really two different transactions. And they're just being put side by side. So now I have a question,
why'd you do that?
Yeah. Especially with Shimshon Rafal Hirsch's read, especially the first read, that he gave the meal in the beginning. He said to them, the meal is yours.
So why
did you say at the end? You made it sound like that. You know, it's not just two coincidental stories. It sounds like it's a narrative.
It's not good for us as Jews for generations to come.
So I give you two options. One option, the simple option, is to say the Torah doesn't really frame it that way for us. We talk ourselves into reading it that way because of what we know about Esav. Because we know that Esav is a hunter. We know Esav is a murderer. We know Esav is somebody who marries into Yishmael's family. Like, we know. Like, I think I gave a share a few years ago about, I was very upset because one of my kids had a teacher who told them, you know, when you look at Esav just shot in the psukim, he's not so bad. That's not true. When you look at Esav in the psukim, he is every bit as bad as you think he is. It's just that you have to read carefully. But we did this in a shir, like, I don't know how many years ago it was, 4 or 5 years ago. My point is, you read this story with what you know about Esav, and that colors your read, but the Torah didn't really fool you. That's one way to look at this. The other way to look at this is that the Torah is, so to speak, fooling you. The Torah is trying to set a tone. It's juxtaposing Esav's demand for food poured down his throat with Esav selling the birthright. It's deliberately putting them side by side in order to teach me a lesson about Esav's, so to speak, inner spiritual life. Who is this? Who is this person? You know, like at the end when it's very explicit and it says, Vayivas Esav is ha-bechora, he scorns the bechora. It's teaching us about his personality by framing a story in a way that will highlight the degradation of the bechora. Like, you want to know just how much Esav degrades the bechora? Look at this. He says, pour the soup down my throat, and he's willing to just give up the bechora. No matter what Yaakov is offering to pay for it, it's not right. You don't sell a bechora. But that's what he does. This is the kind of person he is. Sorry, you were going to say?
No, it just shows like where his priorities are. Like what
Right. And I gave an example of this. I have this idea. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, in Perek Chelek, they're talking about various horrible people. And Mar Brei de Ravina says to his son, B'chul hu lo savish la midrash. He says, all the other people on this list of bad people, like, don't say too many drushos about them. Meaning when you see a pasuk and you think, oh, I could interpret that to say something negative, don't. Don't assume too much about them. Except Bilam Harasha. Except when it comes to Bilam. Whatever you can find in the psukim, any hint that you can find of something bad about him, say it. Say it about him. Why? Why are we doing that? Because even if it's not pshat, so to speak, the psukim are trying to tell you something about Bilam.
So go ahead and read into it.
Exactly. This is something that happens a lot in Medrash. Very often, Medrash plays with weird words that are used in the Torah or extra things. Not because that's the literal meaning of the word, but because if the Torah chose to use that word, it wanted to teach me a lesson. That's why the Torah did it. So I gave you three examples here, which we're not going to go through all of them. But I'll give you the third one because it's the easiest example and it connects to the Parsha. When David is introduced to us in Perek Tezayin in Sefer Shmuel, all the examples I brought here are from Shmuel because they're things that I taught in Sefer Shmuel, so I had them at hand. But David is introduced to us as Admoni, Ruddy. Who's the other person in the Torah who's Admoni? Esav. It wants you to draw the connection.
Why?
So that's the question, is what does it want me to learn about David? And when you read David's career, you recognize that David has within him, so to speak, Yidei Esav, he has that capacity, but he is going to channel it where Esav did not. But you see it in, I mean, the most blatant example is the story of David and Abigail, where David is ready to go to war and massacre the household of Nabal because of what Nabal did to him, until Abigail says to him, you know, I'm here because Hashem sent me to stop you from doing this, because this is a terrible injustice. What you would do is, you know, I didn't do anything wrong, my family didn't do it. The whole, I mean, whatever, you have to read her whole plea to David. It's in Shmuel Aleph Perek Chafei. But the point is that that's a scene in which David is presented as an almost Esav. It could have gone the other way, but also the language, and we don't have time for this here, but if you read the Perek, just read the Hebrew in the Perek, it draws you towards it. So as an example, it tells us, I think, three times that he put on his cherev, which is what we associate al-charev ha-techia with Esav. We find that she calls David repeatedly Adoni, the same way that calls Esav Adoni. She sends a gift to David, and the gift, she says, Kachna es birchasi, which is what Yaakov says to Esav when he sends his gift to Esav. It's very dramatic there. It's deliberate. He could have become an Esav, and he pulled back. So that's why it uses that word, Admoni. Because it could have used anything to describe what he looked like, but it wants to teach us something. It's trying to show us something. One other example, I'll take the second example. The first one is harder to explain, but the second one is easy. When Shaul has just fought a war against the Plishtim, and through a nace he has succeeded, we're then told about more of his career, and it says, "B'chol asher yifneh yarshia," wherever he turns, yarshia. Now, the word yarshia, Yud, Reish, Shin, Yud, Ayin, pshat level, as I put it on your sheet, is he destroyed. Meaning, all the nations he fought, whoever he fought a war against, he was successful. This is the good part of Shaul's career. He's able to defend the Jews. He's doing what he's supposed to do. However, there are two different Gemaras, one in Sanhedrin and one in Erevin, which read Yarshia as he ruined. Wherever he turned, he ruined things. Meant to be a contrast with David, who is b'chol d'rachav maskil. David is great wherever he turns. We want to gain that contrast with David's success. So it chooses the word yarshia to describe his success, destroying the enemy, because it has this double meaning, where it could also mean he is a rasha, he is ruining things. It's bad. That's what Medrash does. It picks up on things like that, because Tanakh, by framing it this way, is trying to teach us something. And I think that, to go back to where we came from with this, I think that's why the Torah puts the two transactions together. Shot in the story, I'm willing to take with Shimshon Rafal Hirsch, I'm willing to take Redak's father. These approaches, Barb and Hal, a little dicey. But the first two certainly sound like total pshat in the story. He's not selling his bechora for a bowl of stew. He would have demanded something more, and he did demand something more. However, we put them side by side to say, this is what Esav is.
Did demand something more?
Yeah, well, that's the money that he ends up paying. If you look at the Mefarshim who I quoted here, they all say he demands a lot of cash.
Yeah, he pays in money, right?
Where?
Yeah.
The Mefarshim?
Yeah, the Mefarshim who I quoted here, if you look in, Radak quotes it from his father, the Chizkuni, the Hadar Zakenim, they all bring it.
They all mention the money. Yeah. The money's mentioned in the Torah?
No, well, it just says that he sold it.
Birthright. You're right.
It says he sold it.
Like, if you read it differently, it's and like sold his birthright.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, correct.
But then there is the bracha. So there's two parts. Did Yitzchak ever find out that Yaakov did this? And then what was the bracha? Was that
a whole other can of worms.
What was his plan when he died?